Good afternoon to you, and welcome back, or welcome to the show here. Just join me, Ben Larson. My guest here in part two is Chris Target, who is a doctor, MD, medical doctor. Good afternoon to you, Chris, and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Ben, and thank you for having me.
Not at all. You are here basically, not as a doctor, but you are here because you have decided to take up a challenge. You are doing a motorcycle ride in aid of MacPass, and am I right in thinking that we are talking about 21,000 miles?
Yes. I'm riding from the UK all the way down to South Africa, getting a flight over to Nepal, and then all the way back. So the total journey is more than a circumnavigation. It's about 25,000 miles, but on two wheels, including the flights, etc. But on two wheels, it comes into about 21,000 miles. I'll be able to tell you exactly how far in a while.
Yes, you're on your back. How long do you expect to be on that motorbike?
Well, I'm going to take all the time I can afford to take. I have to go back to start work as a doctor again in next August. And my interviews for my jobs, for that job that I'll be starting in August, are in January. So I've got that 6 month window to go, and I'm hoping I can get it all done in that time.
Oh my goodness. Now then, this is quite a challenge, I would say that to you. You're doing this single-handed.
Yes, I think that's what makes it different from other things people may have read about or seen on the television. I know that a lot of people are aware of the trips that a couple of actors have done, but in their case it was always going out with two large Land Cruisers and doctors
exactly.
And everyone to support them. I'll be on my own. There'll be no one else. Obviously, I'll meet people whilst I'm going around the world, which is half the point of doing the trip. But it will be me, solo, unsupported, on my tod for 6 months.
My goodness. That is quite a task, doing that thingy, because if anything happens to you, it could spell trouble. Hopefully it doesn't. That's the whole idea about it all.
That's exactly what my mum is thinking, I'm afraid. She's not happy about it at all.
Oh, sorry about that. Sorry, Mum. I didn't mean to interfere. No. Okay. Now, when did you come up with this? Your mum would probably think, mad idea, my son. When did you come up with this idea?
I first thought of it, what must be getting on for 10 or 12 years ago now, when I first got into motorcycling when I was a medical student in London, because it's the only way to get around it in the big city. And I've just never had the time or money to be able to do it. Obviously, I couldn't take the time off as a student.
No,
and as a doctor, there's always bills to pay. So this is, I think, probably only time in my life, or certainly for the next 20 years, that I'm going to have to do this, because I'm at a point in my career as a doctor when I can take a year off without it affecting me too much.
Sure.
And I've got a bit of chance to earn some money before I go to pay the rent whilst I'm away. But no, 12 years I've been dreaming about it.
My goodness, that's a long time to plan for something, really. I take it you're still single.
No, my partner is Sam. She's a physiotherapist at Papworth Hospital.
I see.
Obviously the plan was in my head a long time before we met, and it was already starting to come together when we first started dating. So
when did you tell her about it?
It probably
cropped
up.
Know.
I don't know. Within the first 30 seconds that we met.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I haven't dropped it on her all of a sudden, but I wouldn't say she worries as much about me as my mum does. But I think she'd rather that either she was coming with me, or more to the point, that I probably wasn't going and I was doing a sponsored bath in beans. Mm-hmm. I think she'd prefer that.
Well, you're still together, so.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, before we go any further, I think we need your first track here, because we need to calm down a bit here, because this is really, really something quite extraordinary. Now, your first chosen track here is The Piano Man. Billy Joel, Piano Man. Of course, I know that particular track. So let's have that before we carry on here. Now, you're listening to this radio station. Radio, the Wednesday afternoon tea time show. We'll be back after this track, and it is exactly 20 past four from Radio Edinburgh. Here we go, back after this.
La 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 la
and that is, of course, Piano Man, and that was Billy Joel. Billy Joel. Anyway, welcome back to the show. We are talking here with Chris Target, a doctor here in this area, who is going on this motorbike ride on a very, very long way, about 22,000 miles. Chris is actually riding on this motorbike completely on his own, which really is a surprise to me, I must admit, probably to you as well. Now then, Chris, you had decided to go. Your mother wasn't too happy. Your girlfriend doesn't mind, or your partner doesn't mind, I understand. So you are lucky there. You are very lucky that you have a partner who is so understanding.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now then, how fond, because this is very important, how fond are you of motorbikes?
Well, I'd always have to say that the first most important thing in my life is my other half, but after that, then medicine and motorbikes are what I live and breathe for. I adore it. When I'm not working and not out on the bike, then I watch on the telly. It's a, I don't know, to make me sound not too crazy, I'd say a mini obsession.
Really? Really?
It's freedom personified. It's relaxing, it's exciting. If you get two bikers who don't know each other and just walk past each other, within 5 seconds they've twigged that they're each bikers, and they'll jabber away for 3 hours and bore everyone else in the room silly. It's a lovely little clique, and everyone you meet who does it just seems to be open, friendly, sort of those people. And I've never met an aspect of motorcycling I don't like.
How old is your motorbike?
Ah, well, Sir Humphrey Bikleby is the name of my motorcycle. He's a KTM, and I've been locoming for the last couple of years to buy him. So I own, let's just say, some of him. So I bought him in April this year. It's taken me a couple of months to prepare him in my spare time for the journey, because there's a number of parts you have to change.
Exactly.
Because even though he's designed for this sort of trip,
you see,
it's a little more. It's like if you buy a four-wheel drive car, it may sound all very good, but it's not necessarily going to take you up the side of a mountain. And so
no.
I've had to alter his suspension, his fuel tanks, the protection for him, because obviously I could very easily hit some very big rocks and can't afford to.
Exactly.
Well, there's no RAC in the middle of Iran.
No.
Or if there is, I'm not a member as yet.
No, I can see that. So these preparations, have you done them yourself?
Well, yes. I'm not a trained mechanic, but when I'm in the middle of nowhere, I have to do all the repairs myself. I mean, I love getting mucky and greasy. I service my own car because I enjoy it. It's so different from my work in the hospital where you have to be so clean. It's kind of a guilty pleasure to get covered and mucky in oil and grease. So no, I've done it all myself. So it should anything go wrong, I'm that much more familiar with him for helping him if he becomes sick.
Okay. How big is the petrol tank?
Well, as of 2 weeks ago, it's gone up from 19 litres to 45 litres. So it holds almost as much petrol as my car now. So that should hopefully take me 400 miles on a single tank. Obviously, the fear is that for a lot of the roads in Africa, you're going to be going 5 miles an hour because of the difficulty of the train, which uses a tremendous amount of fuel.
Yes.
So you need to make sure that you're not going to run out. And that's the last thing I want to happen. I've already run out of petrol in the middle of Huntingdon. I really want to do it again in the Sudan.
No, you don't want that. You're dead right there. So the second tag, where is that placed then? On the back seat or?
No. I've had to take the bike almost completely apart. The tanks are built into the sides of the bike by the original design. So I've had to take all that off, take out off the indicators and all the protective bars, etc. And I've mounted the new tanks where the previous ones were. They're just
over twice the size.
Okay.
So he's still handsome.
Yeah.
He's just a bit fatter than he was.
Yeah. Another thing, of course, which could be tricky, because motorbikes haven't got a spare tire. So about the tires, what can you prepare yourself for? Again, say a puncture, or will you have to repair a puncture?
Well, a bit of both. I try to avoid them if possible. Even though I don't need them, I'm put inner tubes into my tires.
Oh,
so
dear.
That way, if I get a puncture, I can take the wheel off and change the inner tube, and then at a later stage I'll carry spare inner tubes as opposed to spare tyres. And so that way I can then repair the inner tube with a classic puncture repair kit.
Yeah.
And hopefully the whole thing, if I get a puncture half an hour later, I'm back on the road. Touch wood.
As simple as that.
Well, it sounds very simple, but then again, it sounds very simple saying I'm going to go off for 6 months and do a 21,000 mile trip. Since I've started actively doing the planning and the preparation for it over the last couple of months, I can promise you it's anything but simple.
No,
it's
very
complicated.
I can't believe that. What cc is your motorbike?
990.
Oh, is
so
that old?
Fairly big. Well, yeah. in a motorcycle world, that's fairly
large. Yeah, I suppose it is, really. Well, you can't get a BMW with the 1600 cc, can't you?
Ah, yes, but you wouldn't want one of those.
No, not a trip like that. No, you're quite right there. You're quite right there, actually. So the preparation of the motorbike is extraordinarily important in your case. Now, you obviously like to, as I take it when I think about it, travel fairly light, don't you? Don't want a great big suitcase on the back seat, do you, with a lot of clothes and a lot of stuff there, do you? I mean,
very much so. In fact, in preparation for the trip, I've done a few practice trips. I've taken Humphrey and I down to the south of France. We got there in 2 and a bit days. And stayed with my some of my girlfriend's relatives, and then we came back, and then we did a tour through Scotland, and I managed to get most of my stuff and my girlfriend on the bike.
Oh,
so I think that when I go for the trip, I'll be Son's girlfriend, and hopefully there'll be enough space. But you do count the amount of sets you're going to take on one hand. And just have to wash a lot, I suppose, because every extra bit of weight is a little bit less stable. The bike is at low speeds and it's more fuel. And to be honest, there's just not a lot of room. I'm only going to have three small boxes that are fitted to the bike, sort of panniers, and one bag, a special waterproof bag, where it'll keep my clothes and my sleeping bag in. That way, that's always dry come the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, okay. After that, I think we will have a little break here and come back, and we shall listen to another of your tracks here, Baker Street. Of course, J.R. Rafferty. That's a very good track, that is indeed. You like J.R. Rafferty, do you?
Oh, what's not to like?
Okay. Here we go. We'll be back after this, and we shall have another chat with Chris Target, and we shall find out where he starts and how he go along the route all the way half the way around the world. So here we go, back after this. course, that was Rafferty and Baker Street. Fantastic talk. That is indeed. So we have a conversation here with Chris Target, who is going on this fantastic motorbike ride. He's been telling us about his motorbike, how he prepared and so on. And, of course, he's got a website here, www.tiggerstravel.org. Did I get that right?
Yes, tiggerstravels.org.
Tiggerstravels.org, where you can read all about what will happen with this particular trip. And, of course, it is in aid of the MacPress. Now then, Chris, how do you hope to raise money for MacPress? Because, of course, some people know about MacPress, and I suspect a lot of people doesn't really know much about MacPress. I have to say to you now that the founder of MacPress was a doctor out at Bochum, who, in fact, founded MacPress in this area. He's a retired doctor now. You know his name, don't you? Because I can't remember. He's been on air here with me.
I know of two who were around, who were there doing it 25 years ago, but I don't know if they were the founders. Because, I mean, part of my interest in raising money for MagPass is that my girlfriend's life was actually saved by MagPass when she was seven.
My goodness.
Her and her mother's life was saved by two MagPass doctors who were on duty for MagPass at the time. And obviously I know of it and would, because I'm an accident emergency doctor, I would like to be a MagPass doctor, an air ambulance doctor one day. So
oh, you want to be that yourself?
I would love to be. It would be a dream to do something like
that. Oh, my goodness, I didn't realise that.
But I was talking with my girlfriend and her mum, and her mum just suddenly piped up and went, well, yes, that's obvious, because... And out came the story, and Sam, my girlfriend, didn't even know all of the story.
Oh.
And so actually, through this, and through meeting and becoming friends with some of the ladies who run MagPass, we're actually going to meet up 25 years later with the two doctors who saved Sam's life.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yes, we're quite excited.
There we
looking
are.
Forward to that.
My producer has just had to be an important note here, ladies and gentlemen. Neville Silverstone is a MacPass founder. So there you go. Mm. And he was a doctor, I believe, in Bochum at one time. Yes.
Excellent.
So Neville Silverstone, he has been on air with us here some time ago. So thank you for that, Brian. I appreciate that. So now we know what it all is about. Yes, he came on here on Radio Addenbrookes. He came in there with me August 2007.
Oh.
When he came on here. Oh, my producer, he's on the go. Nothing gets by him. Nothing passes his mind. So there we are. Anyway, so you're going to hope to raise money for MacPass, and you're hoping that people will send money to them or to your website, tiggerstravel.org. Is that how you hope it will happen?
Yes. Just by clicking on a simple link on my website, it can take you to a page where you can donate online. Or I'm sure if people wanted to send it directly to the charity, that's fine, because the donation website goes directly to the charity. I wouldn't want any of it to come to me. But I'm not just raising money for MagPass. I wanted to raise money for one domestic charity and one foreign charity. So I'm also part of the funds that I raise will be going to Riders for Health. And that's a charity that supplies and maintains motorcycles in Africa to get healthcare workers to remote villages that otherwise would have no healthcare provision.
Oh.
And so as a doctor and a motorcyclist, it seemed the other natural choice.
Yes,
for me to raise money for. So
I'll
hopefully be getting a few pennies to them as well.
That's a very, very excellent idea, I must say. Anyway, talking about the motorbike again now. Here we are about quarter to five. Now we're 15 minutes away, so we are out of time fast. Now, you set off from Cambridge when you go. When do you actually go? Have a set date?
Well, I did. I was leaving at the 1st of February, but things are a little bit fluid at the moment. As soon as I get the dates for when my job interviews are, in January. As soon as that's done, then I can go straight afterwards. But I will probably be setting on a fixed date when I start to apply for the visas I need for going around the world, which is phenomenally complicated.
Yes, it is, yes.
Some I will have to get on the way. Obviously, I'm going to get as many as I can in advance. So then I will need specific dates to apply for each country. So I'm guesstimating it will be the last, probably the late January, beginning of February.
Okay. Are you bringing a laptop as well?
Well, I haven't quite sorted out how I'm going to record things. I bought a diary to do it the old-fashioned way, but also I'm writing blogs for a number of websites and two newspapers as well. So I've got to somehow figure out how I'm going to get the photos and my words back home from the middle of nowhere. So I'm desperately looking for someone in telecommunications to give me a bit of advice as well.
Yeah, I can see you need that. So, okay, where did they come? You set off from here, and where is the first port of call? Where will you ride to first?
Well, as Europe is on my doorstep, I'm going to leave visiting the rest of Europe for another day. So I'm going to blast across Europe as quickly as I can.
You mean to France?
I'm going to be going through France, Luxembourg, basically the quickest route to get to Venice. And then I take the boat from Venice to Alexandria in northern Egypt, and then follow the Nile all the way down to Aswan, where the Aswan Dam is.
The Aswan Dam.
Because there's only two ways to enter Sudan, and the main one, and the one that sounds more fun, is to actually catch the ferry from Aswan to Wadi Halfa.
Okay.
And then it's basically just aim down the east coast of Africa, going through Ethiopia, Kenya, Mozambique, I'm probably getting these in the wrong order now, Tanzania, Malawi, Mozambique, Swaziland, and then into South Africa.
And that's the end state in South Africa?
No, that's only halfway. I then ship the bike and myself in about 36 hours to Nepal. That will land in Kathmandu, and then I ride the bike out of Nepal into India, and then I'm planning to ride through the Himalayas National Park, because I've done quite a bit of research, and I think some of the best riding roads in the world are up there, and I think it might be nice to cool down after a while, because I've just ridden all the way through Africa, and test whether my sleeping bag really does work at minus 17 degrees, and the bike.
Yeah.
And then it's Pakistan, avoiding the Swat Valley and the Afghan border as much as possible for personal safety reasons. Although when I cross into Iran, I'm about 40 miles south of the Pakistan-Afghan border. Then through Iran, Turkey, Greece, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Romania, where I'm stopping at Vladimir, trying to see if I can see all of Vladimir Palev's castle, and then through to Salzburg, as it's just somewhere I've always wanted to go, Bratislava, Salzburg, and then just blast home.
My goodness, that's good. So when you set off then, where is your first stop going to be? Have you decided on that?
Well, I think I'll probably get close into Austria in my first day.
There you go.
If I can. I managed to get as far when I did my test ride down to the south of France. I got from Sautry, where I live, to Troyes in France, and that was about 500 miles.
In one day,
including the ferry crossing, and I think I could probably do more than that, because obviously I want to get on the further exotic parts of the trip as soon as possible, and after that I won't be planning to do much more than 150 to 200 miles a day. And I think at times in Africa, going through Kenya, I'm going to be lucky if I'm doing 25 miles in a day because of the difficulty of the terrain.
Yeah, my goodness, you'll be pretty tired after 500 miles on a motorbike.
It does ache a bit. I've got a special inflatable thing to keep my bottom from getting too sore. It makes a hell of a difference.
Okay. I won't ask any more questions on that score. No, it's... I just come to think because 2 weeks ago I spent 4 days in the Loire Valley. I live up in Basse-Lettre with my partner, and we went on a coach trip with another team of people, 25 of us. We set off 7 in the morning, and we got to a town called Cross in Loire Valley, 8 o'clock in the evening.
Mm.
It's a long ride you're doing.
I don't plan on being in the saddle for 13 hours a day.
No.
Very often, if at all, I can avoid it. One can very easily think, oh, well, I can do this number of miles and that number of miles. I think the point of the trip is to interact with the places as you go through them. One doesn't want to rush. I'm not trying to set a distance endurance speed record.
No.
I want to stop and talk to people. And I think being on a motorcycle gives you an advantage and a vulnerability that hopefully local people will respond to. Whenever I've been on a motorcycle on foreign climbs before, people are always very helpful and go out of their way.
And I
think that will enable me to get a lot more out of the social side of the trip.
Yes, you certainly will. So, okay, I think we need to have your third and final choice here because we are 9 minutes away from the hour of 5 o'clock when Mike Brown will come on. So, Banana Boat Song, and of course, the one and only Harry Belafonte. Your reason for that is you like him, or is it just because the song, the Banana Boat Song? Or?
Well, I'm a massive movie fan, so a lot of my taste in music comes from the scores to films. And so this was in a film, I think it was the first 15 film I illegally watched as a young boy, called Beetlejuice.
Oh, I see.
And it comes from there, and I've loved it ever since.
Okay, we'll be back after this. For the final part of the Wednesday afternoon tea time show.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and a drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot,
bunch. Daylight come and me want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot, bunch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Day. A beautiful bunch, a ripe banana.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Lift
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot, bunch.
Come and me want go home.
indeed, we are out here. I can see that I was Harry Belafonte, and that was the Banana Boat song. We're just talking about, Chris and I here, we're just talking about petrol now when music was playing. £4,000 on petrol, that's what you estimate you will get away with, and you have spent on other equipment, you said £15,000-16,000. You spent a lot of money, Chris.
Well, I have. The fortunate thing, being a doctor, that I'm very lucky, is that if I need extra money to supplement my income, it's very easy for a doctor to go and do extra shifts in either in his own hospital or another hospital. And I know I'm very lucky to have that opportunity to be able to earn a little extra.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that for the past couple of years to earn enough for the deposit for the bike. The rest I got on finance, and I'm paying off as I work at the moment. But you start adding in all the little bits here and there.
It certainly
is. The special fuel tanks were just shy of £1,500.
The fuel tank alone?
The fuel tanks alone.
£1,500. My goodness. Couldn't you have found a company who would say, okay, we will sponsor you on this trip, we will help you to pay for some of the expenditure to do that?
Because I'm trying to find companies.
That's what I would have thought.
Who are doing it now. So if you're in bed in Addenbrookes at the moment, and you work for a company who you think might be interested, or you own a company who you think might be interested, because the trip, the unsupported solo nature of it, me being a doctor, the story with my girlfriend, it seems to be attracting quite a lot of attention. And we're getting quite a lot of coverage in the press. I believe that we're going to be on TV as well.
Yes.
And so to find a partner to do the trip with, in a sort of corporate sponsorship way, I think would be great for the trip, because it guarantees that the trip's going to go ahead.
Yes.
But also it would be great for the company to be associated with, I think, this sort of good adventurous deed.
It's most unusual, because I heard of many of these sponsorships and people doing things for charity, but I never come across anything as, do I dare say, as daring as this. Since, what was his name, who sailed around the world single-handed, Sir, what was his name now, the man who sailed around the first one, I think you are definitely as daring as that, because you're doing it single-handed, and it's a lot, because everything you do is down to you. At least if you had a partner, you could discuss it and decide what to do. But in your case, you're on your own.
Oh, if I won the lottery tomorrow, I would instantly go up and buy my friends houses for them and teach them how to ride motorcycles and say, we're going as a group of of four and riding around the world, which would be just as exciting and better in some ways, but I think it would lose some of the challenge. You've got someone to fall back on.
Yes.
I think you would lose some of the vulnerability, which is half the challenge. I'm looking forward to the person I'll be having done this.
Yes.
And I think as a wiser and older man than I once was, I think I should be able to cope with it psychologically. I've travelled around the country meeting up people who have done other long bike tours, and obviously we sit down as two bikers do and jabber for hours, but the one thing they all come back to is saying how difficult it can be psychologically to be away for 6 months with, but you know, relatively little contact with friends and family, and a lot of one's own company. So I'll have to start liking me a little more.
I just have a thought here. When you come back, will there be a way where you can go to one of our local newspapers and say, look, I've just done it, do you want to photograph me on my motorbike and write about this bike has just been with me halfway around the world or whatever? Are you able to do that?
I've already done it. In
oh,
fact,
well, good
in
for
fact,
you.
In today's issue of the Hunt Post,
yes,
there's an article about myself and the trip. And hopefully the Hunt's Post and maybe other archant newspapers like the EDP, and I believe I'm going to be in the Cambridge local press as well.
Yes.
The Hunts Post are going to follow me every week or two and have an article. I'm going to write a travel journal.
Are they now? Oh, I see. That's great.
Well, assuming I can figure out how to get photographs from photographs and my words from Mozambique back to back to Blighty. Assuming I can figure that out, then yes, I'd like to, I think it would be good to keep the interest in the project up.
Yes,
it and would be. It'll be good for the charities. Hopefully, good for the fundraising side of it. I'm looking forward to it. I've never been a journalist or a travel writer before, but I guess I've dropped myself into having to do both.
Got a real challenge here, aren't you? Okay, well, on that, I'm afraid we'll have to finish because the hour 5 o'clock is here now, nearly, and the news from Big Sur Radio Campus here, and followed by Mike Brown, who will be on air after me. So, thank you so much for coming along, and as I said, we hope we can hear from you again, either before you go or when you come back, or whatever, we can make some dates with you and find out what is happening here, because that would be most interesting.
It would be my pleasure, Ben. Thank you very much
for having
me. And if anyone would like to donate, that website is www.tiggerstravels.org.
Indeed, indeed. And I'll say goodbye with that one because we are waiting for the news now.